Supporting WHYY, the National Constitution Center. Award-winning NPR show Intelligence Squared U.S. returns for a timely and provocative debate on whether the Equal Protection Clause requires states to license same-sex marriages, Tuesday, June 2nd at 6:30 p.m. Program includes a pre-reception and sneak peek of the center's upcoming feature exhibition, Speaking Out for Equality, the Constitution, Gay Rights, and the Supreme Court. Tickets at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org/debate.
More than 2 million people are expected to descend on Philadelphia when Pope Francis visits the city in September. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Starting us off this evening, WHYY's Katie Culinary reports that preparations are already well underway across the region for the pontiff and the crowds.
On a sweltering morning, dozens of Catholic school students in uniform help unveil plans for a mural to commemorate this fall's papal visit. Presiding over the event is Donna Crilly Farrell, executive director of the World Meeting of Families, the five-day conference drawing Pope Francis and an expected 2 million visitors. So she's just a little busy these days.
Every day is filled with transportation meetings, security discussions, planning around our finances and the logistics of the papal visit, and also we are organizing a huge conference.
With just 3 months left to plan, officials in Philadelphia and across the region are also quite busy. In Delaware County, the district attorney's office hosted a summit to talk about preparations for the event. Lieutenant John Arnold leads the Special Operations Division for SEPTA Transit Police.
Doing the type of work I do, this is something that you basically live for and train for all your professional life.
Arnold says the agency has plans to deal with the mobs of people who will be clogging the public transportation system, including SEPTA ambassadors standing by to answer questions and keep the peace. Agencies in the region have also been asking advice from other cities which have hosted big events, from presidential inaugurations to the World Cup soccer finals. Lieutenant Danielle Wojnicki with the Philadelphia Fire Department acknowledges hosting the Pope will be a huge test for Philly compared to the Made in America concert and the Broad Street Run, which draw just tens of thousands of people.
So it's just going to be logistically, do we have enough resources? Do we have enough equipment? Do we have enough medical supplies? Should people need them for the event?
Wojnicki says the city is already planning to give out 1 million bottles of water a day.
I'm confident you're going to be safe once you're there. Our concern is just getting you to the venue safely.
Tim Boyce is the director of Homeland Security for the Delaware County District Attorney's Office. Visitors are expected to stay as far as 120 miles from Philadelphia. So the thing that's keeping Boyce up at night? The thought of busloads of people stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic, especially people who may need specialized care.
We do expect a lot of people with health problems, with physical and mental impairments, to try and see the Pope. And as that group moves towards the area, how long can they sustain themselves?
Boy says it's not too early for visitors to prepare themselves for watching the Pope with 2 million others keeping them company. Katie Culinary, WHYY News.
Though it may not rival the Pope's visit, Philadelphia will honor 7 legends of the local music scene this fall. Today, the Philadelphia Music Alliance announced its 2015 inductees to the Philadelphia Music Walk of Fame. WHYY Shai Ben-Yakov reports that 2 names stand out on the list. One reached the height of her popularity nearly 70 years ago. The other just recently attained international star status.
So much time.
Born in Philadelphia in 1915, Billie Holiday didn't stay long. She spent much of her early childhood in Baltimore, then moved to Harlem and dropped out of school at age 11. The talented vocalist catapulted to stardom in the 1930s on hits such as Summertime, What a Little Moonlight Can Do, and Miss Brown to You. Considered one of the best jazz singers of all time, Holiday's life and career were cut short by struggles with drugs and alcohol. She died at just 44 years old. Philadelphia music icon Kenny Gamble came of age in a later musical era and says he never got the chance to meet Holiday.
But I enjoyed her artistry, you know, and I think it's just great. You know, you got Billie Holiday. It just shows how deep the talent in Philadelphia is.
Another band being honored has been on the cusp of mainstream stardom for decades, but it's only in the past few years that they've truly gotten their due.
To the left is the most talented band in all the land, trying to lend a hand. The Roots from Philadelphia, ladies and gentlemen.
It was considered a risky move when the hip-hop group from Philadelphia with a mighty underground following took a nightly gig as Jimmy Fallon's house band on Late Night. They've moved with him over to The Tonight Show, and now everyone knows their names. 17 years of counting, or trying to climb up the rough side of the mountain. Friends warn me, I'ma have to do it without them. No problem. Other inductees include Ray Benson, the 6'7" frontman for the country band Asleep at the Wheel, Andrea McArdle, Broadway's original Annie, The Tramps, who earned a Grammy for their biggest hit, Disco Inferno, and 80s hair band Cinderella. WOGL's longtime midday DJ Harvey Holiday will also be inducted. I'm Shai Ben-Yakov, WHYY News.
Philadelphia's gallery at Market East is largely vacant now, awaiting new tenants pending redevelopment of the two-block stretch on Market between 8th and 10th Streets. The terms of that overhaul was the focus of a public city council hearing today. Jared Bray of Plan Philly was in attendance and joins me now. Jared, welcome back to Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Jared, I understand the talk quickly turned to money, specifically tax incentives.
Right. The city is offering a package, a $55 million tax increment financing package. Basically, what this does is it freezes the gallery's property tax bill at its current rate for the next 20 years. So imagine that at your house, you pay $2,000 a year in property taxes, and the city says for the next 20 years, that's your rate, and you can keep whatever the difference would have been if we had kept raising it.
Sounds like a pretty sweet deal. What does Philly get in return?
What Philly gets in return is basically what Philly's been trying to get for the past 8 years and even longer, which is a revitalized gallery. Basically, what they're trying to get out of it is a mall that has openings onto the street rather than all the shopping happening indoors, which is what currently happens. So Market Street has been described by the former councilman Frank DiCicco as a dead zone between, say, 12th and 6th. And what they're trying to do here is open up the windows onto the street so that people can walk in and out along the street and have a more lively atmosphere on Market Street.
Ultimately generating more revenue for the city.
More revenue for the city, exactly. At the end of the 20-year tax break, the city would have more property taxes coming in, more sales taxes, more liquor-by-the-drink taxes. Basically, they're framing it, the city's framing it as a net win for the tax dollar.
And the largest beneficiary, as always, of that tax windfall would be the city schools.
Right. The city school district has already signed off on this tax break because they were convinced that without this tax break, this deal wouldn't happen. And they know that at the end of the tax break, there will be greater taxes being generated at the mall there.
Now, is there any threat that if this tax break doesn't go through, the developer will back out?
I mean, that's always the threat. I think that's the threat that the developers always want the city to think is happening. You know, you can never know beforehand whether this amount of money makes the deal or not, but the developer is obviously always going to say, yes, we need this money or else we won't do it, because if they don't say that, then they won't get the money from the city.
Is there a better sense of the type of retailer who might occupy some of these spots?
Yeah, I think what the city or what the gallery owners are going for is high-end retail outlets, though, so sort of the discount versions of, you know, high-end fashion retailers.
Very different than the most recent occupiers of the space.
Sure, yeah. It's been Kmart, Burlington Coat Factory, stuff like that. The renovation of this project is based on the Fashion Outlets of Chicago, which has outlet versions of high-end retailers.
Jared, at the expense of listeners' eyes crossing, zoning also came up. But one portion of that might be pertinent, though, and that's regarding billboards and signage.
Right. A couple of years back, the city enacted something called the Market East Advertising District, which basically allows buildings on that corridor to build these bright digital billboards, as long as they're making certain monetary, you know, spending money on improving the buildings that are there. So that's in effect here as well. The gallery will be able to put up some digital billboards, and in addition to that, they get exempt from some of the rules for sort of regular accessory signage, like the signs that say The Gap or, you know, Hard Rock Cafe.
Now, how long is this project expected to take place? And in the meantime, what will be the inconvenience to both motorists and pedestrians?
So Preet, which is the company that owns the gallery and is going to own more of that property in the next couple months, presumably, says it will take about 2 years to actually demolish what they need to demolish and rebuild what they need to rebuild. In the meantime, some of the concourse areas between Market East Station, now known as Jefferson Station, and you know, the other buildings that are connected there is going to be closed. So people who normally walk underground from the train station to wherever their workplace is are going to have to go outside.
Some but not all. Jefferson Station will still be a destination along SEPTA.
Jefferson Station will still be open, yes.
Jared, thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Thanks so much.
Jared Bray of Plan Philly. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Chevron agrees to pay $5 million to settle a wrongful death lawsuit filed by the family of a contract worker killed last year when fire engulfed a Pennsylvania shale gas well. The Pittsburgh Tribune Review reports an Allegheny County judge approved the settlement of the case. It was brought by the family of 27-year-old Ian McKee this month. Federal and New Jersey health officials have identified more than 150 people who possibly had contact with a patient who died of Lassa fever. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says so far, most of them face no danger, though six are at high risk of having been exposed. Lassa fever is far less likely to be fatal than Ebola. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is calling for an end to the Common Core standards in the state, saying the system isn't working for students.
This will in no way affect our efforts to continue effective testing and measurements of our students through the PARC test. We must continue to review and improve that test based on results.
The likely Republican presidential contender says that the national standards have brought confusion and frustration to both parents and classrooms. 81 degrees, cloudy skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks tonight on WHYY. Still ahead, proponents of online cyber charters decry that Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf is slashing their funding.
Our students shouldn't be seen as, you know, second-class citizens in the funding model. And that's what this feels like.
Newsworks tonight continues on WHYY.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The foundation offers charitable gift annuities, charitable remainder trusts, and pooled income funds. Talk to your financial advisor about how these income-generating and tax-saving tools can build resources for community organizations. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org. 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
The WHYY Speaker Series. Meet your favorite public media personalities.
This is Terry Gross. Join me at the Wilmington Grand Opera House on Sunday, June 7th for Off Air with Fresh Air. I'll talk about interviewing, play clips of conversations that went particularly well or poorly, describe what happens behind the scenes of the show, and you'll get to turn the tables and ask me a few questions.
For tickets and more information, whyy.org/speakers. Arden Theater Company presents Passion by composer and lyricist Stephen Sondheim. A tale of love and obsession, Passion won the Tony Award for Best Musical and boasts one of Sondheim's most lush and romantic scores. Set in 19th century Italy, Passion finds a handsome army captain pursued by a mysterious ailing woman, now through June 28th. For tickets, 215-922-1122 or ardentheater.org. The Arden Theater Company supports WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. In general, Pennsylvania's public schools will be big winners if Governor Tom Wolf manages to advance his budget plan through the Republican-led state legislature. While most schools would get a funding boost, a few would endure drastic cuts. And as WHYY's Kevin McCory reports, the state's cyber charter schools say Wolf is being a bit of a cyber bully.
The student and the teacher can see and manipulate the screen.
Kylene Ball, director of education at 21st Century Cyber Charter, stands in one of the school's classrooms, a sun-filled room in a nondescript building in Downingtown, where rows of teachers in cubicles interact one-on-one with students through headsets and computer screens.
She's able to see what the student's doing, but then talk to her and help her.
Kathleen Groff teaches high school English.
So now we have to decide, is this active or passive voice? So are the paintings doing the action? Are they showing or are they being shown?
Cyber charters give home-based online instruction, often to students who've struggled in traditional schools. For years, some education advocates have howled about how Pennsylvania funds these schools. It works like this. Say there's a cyber charter based in Altoona. It can enroll a kid from anywhere in the state, and it gets a percentage of whatever money would have been spent on that student in that home district.
Why should a cyber charter get $25,000 for one student and $13,000 for another when the school is doing the same thing for those two students.
Susan DeJarnett is a Temple Law professor who focuses on inequities in public education. She says it's mind-boggling that the state's cyber law, passed under former Republican governor Mark Schweiker, calls for cyber charters to be funded in the same way as brick-and-mortar charters.
As a common sense matter, bricks-and-mortar charter schools are more expensive to run because they have buildings, people to take care of the buildings, and a lot more teachers.
Governor Wolf agrees, saying the current system doesn't ask a vital question. How much does it actually cost to provide a cyber education? His fix gives cybers a flat fee of just under $6,000 for each student. If that happens, $160 million will be freed up to devote to traditional school districts who've been clamoring for more state aid. Cyber operators, though, say Wolf's plan is patently unfair to the 40,000 kids enrolled in their charters. Again, Kylene Ball.
Our students shouldn't be seen as, you know, second-class citizens in the funding model, and that's what this feels like.
21st Century Cyber Charter currently spends close to $11,000 per student. To operate with under $6,000, officials say teachers would be forced to double their student caseloads. Kim McCulley is interim CEO.
They've made all these conclusions about our school, but they have never, ever reached out to us and said, can we please come look?
McCulley questions how Wolf came up with his flat fee. The governor calculated the rate based on the costs incurred by traditional school districts who run online programming.
Those are programs. Those are not cyber schools. Those are cyber programs.
She says standalone cyber schools have many more costs that the governor doesn't account for, such as providing all students a laptop and home internet connection and administering standardized tests across the state.
We're hoping that cooler heads prevail and a closer look is taken at the actual costs of running a cyber school.
Cybers tend to break down into two categories. There's the mega cybers, which enroll thousands of kids, run surpluses, spend a lot of taxpayer dollars on advertising, and tend to contract with for-profit management companies. And then there's the cyber charters like 21st Century, ones set up by consortiums of traditional school districts who advertise little and keep modest surpluses. Both camps score poorly on the state's academic accountability metric, with none meeting the state's benchmark. 21st Century, though, comes closest, and officials there are very open to outside visitors, eager to show that they have nothing to hide in conversations about funding or academic performance.
I like it better than public school because I get more help.
Eighth grader Ashley Mango comes to 21st Century's headquarters once a week. She used to attend the Octorara School District in Western Chester County.
What do you say to your friends about school? When they say, oh, what, you go to school online, what does that mean?
I say that it's the best school ever because I can sleep in longer than they can, and I don't have to get out of my bed.
And you just have a laptop in bed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how much school do you do in your pajamas?
All of it. Unless when I come in here.
PJs or not, Kylene Ball says cyber charters can serve as lifelines to kids who otherwise would fall through the cracks in the traditional system.
These kids are coming to us because something hasn't worked for them in their brick and mortar or in their other charter school, and they need another option.
Governor Wolf remains skeptical of the financials.
I'm certainly willing to have a conversation if they want to push back, but 60% differential for all those things? I'm not sure how that works.
For WHYY News, I'm Kevin McCory.
The Philadelphia Orchestra is about midway through a European tour where the group is playing 14 concerts in 10 cities. We sent reporter Peter Crimmins to tour with the orchestra. He arrived just ahead of them in Lyon, France.
I'm standing in Place Bellecour. It's a large open plaza in the heart of Lyon, France. It's the largest pedestrian square in Europe, and if you're a musician, this is a great spot to be heard. The Philadelphia Orchestra will be playing across town at a massive concrete concert hall called Auditorium Lyon. I'm here in Lyon because this is a fairly significant tour for the fabulous Philadelphians. They visited Europe many times in the past, but this is the first time since the orchestra emerged from bankruptcy and the first time led by its new charismatic music director, Yannick Nézet-Séguin. They want to play in some of the concert halls in Europe where the Western classical canon was born, so they can say, yes, we still got it. Lyon is not so dissimilar from Philadelphia. It's very much a walkable city with a downtown bounded by two rivers. It recently installed a robust bike share program, which residents have taken to in a big way. Thousands of bike share bikes parked at hundreds of stations around the city. From what I can see, they're used constantly. And even a tourist with no French language skills, moi, found it easy to hire a bike at a moment's notice and tool around the city. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Funding for coverage of the orchestra tour comes from Visit Philadelphia at visitphilly.com. Speaking of visiting Philly, tourism is a major industry in our region, and Philadelphia is home to several iconic grand hotels. Today's guest on Recap is an important fixture at one of those properties. He has chef in his title, but don't ask him to cook you breakfast.
It's spelled C-H like chef, chef concierge. It's from French, so it does mean chief concierge, the official title for the head concierge, so it'll be chef concierge. My name is James Portner. I am the chef concierge at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel here in Philadelphia. This is a very busy summer for us in the hotel here. There's a lot of events going on in the city. We just finished up Penn graduation, which is always a big weekend. This past weekend, there was national lacrosse championships in town. Phillies are in town, so there's a lot of planning during the week for each weekend. Anything the guest wants, I'm there to help them with. So I'll set up possibly tours, museums, get them tickets for shows or events. They want to see a sporting event or concert, I can help with that. We'll set up transportation for them. I even set up people to do day trips to Lancaster if they want to go to an Amish farm. I'm always reading about different events going on. You have to keep at least, you know, one step ahead of the curve. Just yesterday I was putting in events in our computer system, so we have it for the Academy of Music for next year's shows in 2016. So I know at least about half a year ahead of time what events are going to be upcoming during that time. Every day is different. I never know what's going to happen each day. Definitely keeps you on your toes, so you really have to have a strong cup of coffee in the morning.
That's chef concierge James Portner from the Ritz-Carlton Hotel on this week's Recap. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. This month marks the 50th anniversary of the Head Start program, and today there are still few early childhood education opportunities for those with limited means. Tomorrow evening, we'll look at the latest efforts at bolstering pre-K in our region. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.